Everything's against me and it's got me down. If I jumped in the river, I would probably drown. No matter how I struggle and strive, I'll never get out of this world alive. These shabby shoes I'm wearing all the time, they're full of holes and nails. Brother, if I stepped on a worn-out dime, I bet a nickel I could tell you if it was head or tail.
Lemon face. Lemon face. All right.
Dressing. She looked good. She can't act.
No. Cannot. Who can act, though?
We can.
We're about to. We're about to act like we like Romulus.
Well, that's not an act for me, dude.
I know.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Ghostbuster Podcast, episode 424.
All right.
Jesus. This is Jorge.
This is Jacob.
This is Ree.
It's not that it wasn't that pent up then, it seems like.
No, actually it was a last second decision to do it at all.
Oh, a little bit calmer.
We also got a lot off our chest in the pre-show.
We did. Yeah. There was a lot to cover. As part of the Patreon pitch later, we'll mention some of that.
Yeah.
So that's a precursor, like that's a we're priming you. That's a foreshadowing of the Patreon pitch.
It's funny because it's like a foreshadowing, but like it's pre-foreshadowing.
Even, exactly.
Because it already happened.
It already fucking happened.
Whoa.
So it's like Tenet.
Whoa.
Oh, dude. Yeah, we talked about all sorts of stuff on the pre-show, but now we can get to the other nitty-gritties. Quite a bit has happened for us since we last recorded. We never know what timeline you'll be in when you hear this.
Yeah, but I mean, at this point, who knows, dude? You could be months into the future.
Yeah. You know what? It could already be like fucking...
it could be Christmas right now, dude.
It could be election night, 2024.
Well, we've almost caught up at this point. Like, I think we'll be behind like two episodes.
Yeah, right now it's because now, at this moment, as of this recording, it's my fault right now, which is new.
Yeah,
it is new.
It's pretty new.
And I, you know, I'm glad that we treat each other with empathy and respect.
Of course. Now we do. Well, we've entered what many of you dorks like to call spooky season.
Oh God.
It's October.
You know what though? Yeah. Yeah, we did.
And you went to a haunt.
I went, okay, like Knott's Berry Farm. I hadn't been there since, like, honestly, like 1995. It had been a while. That's a long time. That's like 30 fucking years, basically. But
actually, speaking of which, yeah. I was telling Ronnie about this. I think you're officially the oldest friend that I have.
Really?
Yeah, officially.
Because why?
Just because I think I've known you the longest that I still talk to. I mean, I've got friends that are older, obviously, but I think you and I are.
You don't actually interact with them?
No.
As a human being?
Yeah.
Me either. Those people, well, that's dope. That's pretty cool. That's why this is an important play date. This is an important thing.
It is.
It helps keep me like, you know how like in There Will Be Blood, when fucking the guy who he thinks is his brother keeps him rooted to like humanity, and then HW does, and then once he loses, like once he sends HW away and kills the guy he thinks is his brother, after that it's like he has no more fucking anchor to humanity.
No more attachments, dude.
Is that the mummy guy, by the way? That dude.
It is, yeah, dude. Yeah.
Because I rewatched it, I'll talk about it later, but yeah.
But Knott's Berry Farm, like, okay, like They have done such a great job with that park.
They fuck.
Yeah.
Like there's a ride called, it used to be Boomerang and now it's Hang Time. And there's fucking there's the Ghost Rider wooden roller coaster.
Ghost Rider is the shit.
We fucking get on that thing and we're like, and I've read the reviews and all this shit, and I'm like, no, this is supposed to be great. And we're going up the thing, and then you see how big this fucking thing is, and it's at night, and it was great, and it was lit up, and it's orange like with the light. And she's like, oh my God, is that part of it? Oh, and then like, that is the craziest fucking wooden roller coaster I've ever been on.
Yeah, that's a good one, man.
Because I've been on like Cyclone at Magic Mountain. Obviously, Colossus is the one, right? But Cyclone, like, if you want a migraine, like, that's the wooden roller coaster to go on. Like, that shit is like, it's a good roller coaster, but it's like, It literally gave me a migraine like twice. I don't know what's up with that ride. But this thing was fucking amazing. Like the speed and intensity of it. And smooth
too.
It was super smooth. And wooden roller coasters, a lot of time that's not the thing. Yeah. They're not smooth. But yeah, then I was impressed with Hang Time was a fucking great ride. Accelerator was fucking insane. Did you do that one?
It's been, I don't know if Accelerator was there. It's been, I think, maybe 15 years since I've been to...
It does the Superman thing, but it does it, and then it has an actual track, and that ride is 25 seconds, right? And I was hearing like all the youngsters in line talking about it's 25 seconds, is it worth the wait, and this, and then like, dude, that ride cannot be more than 25 seconds, because it's not like real time when you're on that thing. It is super fucking intense. The entire time, and it doesn't do just one thing. You go from 0 to 80 in like 3 seconds. It's like the Superman thing. And then it has a track. And it's like, dude, okay, be done. Like, and I was so fucking...
You know what?
Yeah.
You know what, dude? I have been on it. We went with the kids a couple years ago.
Yeah.
And I went by myself, actually, on Accelerator.
Did you?
Yeah, it was fucked.
It was fucking fun, dude. It was great. But anyway, and then, like, of course, like, we love Snoopy. Snoopy's so huge right now. He's got a fucking... Really? You didn't notice that? If on Instagram, like, he's the one.
Also, he said we love Snoopy.
We love... Sophia and I love Snoopy. No, there's a huge resurgence with the Generation Z people and Snoopy, which is fucking dope, because fuck Mickey Mouse, fuck Diddy, fuck, like, you know what I mean? Like,
don't fuck Diddy.
All of them.
No, we don't want to fuck Diddy right now.
Mickey Mouse is Diddy of the fucking mascots, obviously.
Never mind.
Okay.
It makes sense to me.
Yeah. Like, Snoopy, but yeah, we love the park. Anyway. We got there earlier in the day, and then we did this thing called a buffet, which is a fucking Halloween buffet, which was dope. And then you get early entry to the fucking mazes. And, you know, Jacob's talked about that. He know about this thing. They don't have the Halloween Horror Nights IPs.
Yeah, they're all original IPs. That's not Scary Farm, right?
Which is fucking cool. And we went in one maze, and I told you guys on a previous episode, and you've seen firsthand how I am. In these fucking things in high school. I
have, and it was awesome.
Dude.
I didn't know this.
It has not gotten better. Like, I don't want to be like, oh, my PTSD. It literally is what it is. Like, I cannot handle this shit popping out at me.
I never knew this.
In a movie, I'm fine.
So, when you were working at the Haunted Hotel, did they give you pictures? Did they do the thing where at the end they gave you the pictures?
There's no photo ops, yeah.
Okay, like, so
hidden camera stuff.
When we went in high school, the last room they used to do a picture.
Frightmare on Market Street.
Yeah, which was owned by Haunted Hotel. Yeah.
So as you were leaving, you'd get a picture of like, and we were leaving this thing, and the picture is the funniest fucking thing. It's Rhett literally like behind me. Pushing me forward out of this room. It's the funniest.
Did they take a picture when there's like a chainsaw like chasing you or something?
Yeah, that's how it was. Like, it was the last like chase out of it, and they take a picture as you're like walking by.
Oh, it's awesome.
It's the best thing, dude.
Yeah, I was pushing.
I don't know what happened to that picture,
but. And that was high school, so it was. I mean, when I say it hasn't gotten better, it's gotten a little better, but as far as like coping with the thing, like exposure therapy is good. Like, I did better at Halloween Horror Nights a few years ago. Like, I don't, like, this was, like, it was a Waxworks theme, and you know how they do the strobe light fucking thing at Halloween Horror Nights?
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know when it's something, they do a strobe, and it kind of, like, lets you know you're in a place where shit's gonna jump out. That's what I noticed. This does not do that. And I'm just, like, in continual fucking, like, is it coming? Is it coming? Is it coming?
Oh, it's great.
Well, it's great for people that aren't me, because, like, if it's a movie, I'm fine, because it's a complete, like, there's no, like... There's this huge like distance between you and the movie.
Yeah.
You know, but anyway, dude, and both of us they have this Nobu necklace.
Yeah.
And then so the thing is when you wear that and you're in a maze, they're like, "Take that shit off," cuz it's like, "What are you doing in the maze if you don't want to get fucking scared?"
Yeah.
Then out in the street though, they do it 100%. Like, even if the mazes were not like getting worse, which I've heard they are at Halloween Horror Nights with all the Blumhouse shit.
Yeah.
Right? The park itself was so fucking atmospheric. They do such a good job.
Yeah, it's. I want to go so bad to Knott's. I've never even been to Knott's Berry Farm.
I can't believe you haven't been because it was the atmosphere everywhere.
I've seen all the video this year. Yeah. I've seen all the videos. They in Southern California, it's considered like one of the best like haunted attractions / theme parks for Halloween like this year.
Yeah, we both really underestimated Knott's Berry Farm. We wanted to go because it would be like more chill than Disneyland. And it's cheaper and
by a good bit
and,
too.
And there's Snoopy.
Yep.
And what like we ended up getting the season pass and it was our 5 year anniversary.
God damn. Hi, really?
Sophia.
Jesus.
5 years, man.
Hell yeah.
Which is dope. Can't fucking recommend it enough to people. And we look forward to going for Christmas and stuff like that. But yeah, the whole park, dude, like no area. There was little safe areas, but you don't know where, like they just happen.
Yeah, there's certain dedicated scare zones, you know, where there's scare actors roaming around, scaring people and shit.
Absolutely. Yeah. And there's a dude where he has like knee pads on with like wheels on them.
They're sliders.
Is that what it is?
Yeah. So sometimes they actually have shit on their knee pads. Sometimes they don't, but they like to slide and they have these, they're called clacker gloves. That's what they call them in the scare actors. And it's just like, you wear like a, you know, some heavy duty electrical gloves. And then you put these, I forgot what they're called. These connectors, like they fit perfectly on your fingertips, and you could scrape the ground, and they create the sparks and shit like that.
Right, and you're just constantly hearing people scream, which adds to the fucking atmosphere. And then, when we left to the parking lot, that's when you could, because it's open till 1 a.m. For the fucking Knott's Scary Farm, which is cool. But we left about like 12:30 to beat traffic. But like you walk out to the parking lot and you hear like, you know, because the air is carried. All you hear in the parking lot is just screaming. Like the whole fucking park is screaming from rides and screaming from fucking getting scared. And it was fucking dope, dude.
Oh, man. There's a haunt, one of the haunted attractions within Knott's Scary Farm. I really want to check out. I saw so many videos of it. It looks fucking great. It's like this old folks home and then it got taken over by like bugs, so like they're slowly turning into like bug people, and there's like this whole like body horror thing and lots of just old folks turning into like tarantulas and super grotesque and crazy.
Yeah, there was one, I forget the name of the house, but it was a spider and bug theme.
Yeah, that
and
was we were like, the one
fucking no way.
That's like, one of the best ones I've seen.
Yeah that's what other people at the park were saying too.
Fucking nah.
But the other thing was, like, if you have the Nobu necklace, they can't scare you, and they were pretty respectful, but what they do is insult you.
There you go.
They're like, that's about right. Fucking cowards, which is like, you're asking for it, you know?
Yeah. I do like it because, you know, like, not to get too much into, like, the whole, like, industry of, like, scare acting and that whole thing, but, like, yeah, I do, I have so much respect for Knott's Scary Farm because they still carry a lot of, like, traditional haunt stuff where there's, like, a lot of free-form acting and having open dialogue. As much as I love the budget of Halloween Horror Nights and having that Universal Studios budget and crazy-ass just production design, a lot of the scares are what you call, like, a scare and reset, where it's just, like, and they don't even use their own voice. It's a pre-recording, so they have to lip-sync the scares, and then they reset behind a curtain and then do it again. And if it's like a slow group, you can just get the person popping out, repeating the same thing. They're not allowed to have any sort of like artistic freedom with their roles. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, like Knott's Scary Farm, there's certain scare actors that like use the same role year after year and develop a character. They have their own social media. They get really famous and people look forward to these characters.
You could see that makes, makes sense because certain areas too, like there's this dude near the entrance.
Mm-hmm.
And you could tell he's been working that entrance for a while.
Yeah, there's characters like that. Courtney follows a lot of scare actors that are like super, like they've been there. And then
because people are like, "Cool, we're getting into the park, we're good." Oh, and it's like, "No, you're not good." Like immediately, like, and you can't see him coming. You know? Yeah, but it was fucking great, dude. I went and saw a couple shows as well. I saw this guitar phenom. He's like 27 years old. His name is McGee.
McG.
Yeah, dude. He's basically. I didn't like his name, but the dude is fucking great. The dude is. I sent you a song of the guy, and he's going places, and that was fucking great. And we were easily the oldest people at this show at the Observatory.
It's like a solo act thing, or
he's not a solo act. He has He's a singer songwriter, which sounds like, oh, that sucks. But
that sounds fucking lame.
He plays electric guitar, but he really makes it sound electric. So he filters it to make it through synthesizers and stuff. So it's very similar in certain ways to like what Robert Fripp did in the 80s. But the songs are much more accessible. He has a great singing voice. And he kind of straddles the line between this like indie R&B and almost like fucking like, I don't want to say soft rock from the 80s, but it's like filtered with these glitchy little things and all these electronics. And then you have electronic percussion. So like his band up there is another, it's him with his electric guitar and then an electric drum set with huge speakers to make it loud enough to go with his electric guitar. There's no cymbals. So you don't hear any of like the washiness of cymbals. There's no like fucking, and so you have all these synthetic sounds mixed with like this really ethereal, spacey electronic guitar work. And meanwhile, he's fucking just like, as a musician's musician, he's great. But also, chicks are just going to love the fuck out of this guy, and they already do, because he's really something.
Yeah.
And it may not be everyone's cup of tea, because it's a little soft. Mm. But what he has an album out called Two Star and the Dream Police that's like really fucking cool. Anyway.
McGee.
And then I saw Adrian Belew, Tony Levin, Steve Vai, and Danny Carey, drummer from Tool.
Oh, yeah, the AI artists.
Yeah, they exactly. They combined they are currently on tour to perform the music of 80s King Crimson specifically. That's like two members of that lineup were in 80s King Crimson and all that. Robert Fripp's not there, so they got Steve Vai, who's one of the only, and even Robert Fripp said,
good choice.
He's the only one who could. And it was fucking cool. And obviously it's a very niche thing. And I have to say this, like Jorge, like the first half of the show, it was the only time I watched it where I'm like, is Danny Carey the weak link? Because
damn,
they're such fucking wizards, dude. Like it was like, but then he was like, I don't want to say coming more into his own, but like the other songs gave him, you got to see
a little more freedom.
Exactly. But it was fucking great. And if that's a niche thing, obviously, and if you can see them and you like King Crimson at all, it's fucking the closest you'll ever get to seeing them play 2 hours of 80s King Crimson music.
It's pretty sick.
It was pretty fucking cool.
That is cool.
And Steve Vai, like that guy, I know he's I've always known he's one of the greatest living guitarists, but I didn't like his music, and it's like cock rock, and he wears spandex and cowboy hats, and he's like all that stuff that didn't mean like as far as what he's able to do on the guitar. This one he had to tone that down because he has to concentrate on his parts because it's fucking Robert Fripp. But that guy, I mean, no shit, dude. I came out a huge fucking, like, obviously it's Steve Vai, but there's a part of what he did where it sounded like a fucking plane crashing with his guitar and like the range he did on his instrument that out loud, I was like, I just said, what the fuck? Like so loud. And then it dropped out and you could just hear me saying that super loud.
Oh, it's like when the trailer's cut out in the theater and you're like trying to talk really loudly about a movie and then the trailer goes quiet.
Yeah.
And everyone hears you.
Yeah. And everyone was laughing because they were still, it was so fucking hypnotic what happened. I was like, what the fuck? Like it was crazy. But anyway,
it was
like mind-altering shit being sober as fuck, which was dope.
There you go.
But, yeah.
All right.
What'd you watch?
Actually, go first.
Yeah? All right. Well, definitely tune in to the pre-show, you know, if you want to hear a lot about Speak No Evil remake and the Megalopolis. We had a good discussion about that.
Francis Ford Coppola's 40-year passion project.
Something else, man. There's so much to talk about. I could talk about that movie for a full episode.
For easily. A whole podcast. Yeah. Every episode.
Every episode, 5 minutes.
Megalopolis minute podcast. You know, we just break down the movie minute by minute, right? No. Since last recording, I think I mentioned briefly a Park Chan-wook movie that I haven't finished, but called Decision to Leave. I finally finished it.
Yeah.
And I'm no hesitation. It's a straight up masterpiece. I think I'm not a Park Chan-wook, like I haven't seen all of his movies. I know Old Boy. I'm a fan of that movie. I've seen it a dozen times. So I'm trying to explore. I have The Handmaiden.
Josh Brolin one, you're sick.
Yeah, totally. I have The Handmaiden, which I know is one of his more revered films too, after Old Boy. I have to watch that. But I watched Decision to Leave from, I think, 2020,
It's like 2 or 3 years ago.
Yeah, like 2 or 3 years ago. Amazing film. It's a really kind of dark romance between a suspect and a detective. And I will say, you use this term a lot with films, but the hang time. Yeah. And this film, I have, even since seeing it like 2-3 weeks ago, I haven't stopped thinking about the ending of it. It is, it totally, the ripple effect, just it sticks with you like Old Boy. Like the ending is incredible, and it proves why like Park Chan-wook is one of the greatest Korean directors out there next to Bong Joon-ho, and highly recommend it. I watched actually a couple nights ago. I was really looking forward to it, and it could have been better, but I checked out Kevin Smith's new movie, the 4:30 movie.
I was looking forward to it for once too, and then it looked kind of a big disappointment.
Yeah, it was cute, and you know, Courtney and I, you know, our big thing is every single week we go to the movies. That's our date night, you know. And this movie is a love letter to like date nights at the movies, and it just wasn't exactly what I wanted. And honestly, the concept is perfect and it's cute, but like, it's the director, and I don't want Kevin Smith directing this type of movie. I want, and it's a great
story.
Or any
story. Type of movie. Or any movie.
Unfortunately now, yeah.
And except Mallrats.
This movie would have been great under in someone else's hands, because there was so much potential, because I really dug the whole thing, and it's this 80s film, and the guy asked the girl out, and they're going out to the movies, and they're going to be at the theater all day, and they got 3 movies to watch, and just like how Courtney and I, we just have spent all day at the theater, and we sometimes movie hop or shit like that, and that's what it's all about with friends, with a girlfriend. And the film, it's just the dialogue, and it's so ham-fisted with the references. Like, I get it, it's the 80s. Like, how many references do you have to do to
kinda... like Romulus, dude? Oh, sorry.
No, so you know, it's more of a miss for
dude,
me.
Was there a line from Mallrats in it, dude?
It's got the whole fuck. Every single person from every Kevin Smith movie imaginable in it, for sure. Yeah, but I did like that the main cast was a new, fresh set of faces, and they were acting better than probably anybody he's ever had in any of his other previous
except
films.
Chasing Amy.
Probably, yeah.
You know,
I did. Yeah,
you got to get it going.
There you go. So 4:30 movie, I think it's worth a watch, but you'll probably be underwhelmed. But I think it's worth checking out because it's like this. It feels like a new stage
or
for
at
Kevin
the most
Smith.
Whelmed.
Yeah, whelmed, very whelmed. I checked out Oddity, and
that's on Shudder now.
I was bummed that I missed it in theaters. I think just my schedule didn't line up, and it was only in theaters for like a week because it's a very indie film. It's a British movie, I think. I don't know if it's a sophomore effort, but it's this follow-up after Caveat, which I never seen, and I know a lot of people loved it. I will say, you know, this year hasn't been like scariest. There's a lot of great movies, a lot of great horror films, but nothing like overtly like terrifying, scary. This isn't technically one of them.
Civil War, dude.
Civil War. There you go.
Jesus Christ. Don't forget Romulus, dude.
That was pretty...
It's a portent of things to come, dude.
There you go.
Dude, when fucking the android fucking...
Oh, fuck off.
Quotes Ripley, dude. That shit was scary.
That was scary. highly recommend Oddity, dude. It is one of like the spookiest movies. Like, I think if you watch it closer to Halloween and you're in the vibe, like it's a fun... late night at home, lights off type of movie. It's like total ghost story mode. Like,
I've heard that word a lot about that movie, that it's spooky.
It is. Like the way they set up every scare with like a little ghost story, a little anecdote, and you're just on edge and you're like, oh, this is going to build up to something later, you know? And I love the concept of it. Check out Oddity for sure. I saw a little before seeing the film that we're reviewing today, Strange Darling. I wanted to check out more Kyle Gallner films. I had 2 lined up. I only got to watch one of them. I didn't get to see The Passenger, which I know you watched and you recommend, right?
Goes on a shooting spree.
Yeah.
I recommend it as a low budget indie film with a good premise. I mean, for him.
Yeah.
He elevates that entire thing.
Yeah. And I wanted to explore his career because he really, anything he's in, he's kind of, not everything, but I'd say the last 5 years, he's been kind of stand out with his performances, and he's kind of carved out a little thing for his roles.
It's a trip too, because like as far as like horror stuff goes, way back in fucking the Nightmare on Elm Street.
Yeah, in the remake. That was the earliest I'd known him in. Yeah.
Which is a fantastic remake.
Yeah, and he's been doing
Psych!
And he's been doing shit. I think he did Haunting of Connecticut. He's been in all sorts of weird stuff.
Yeah.
So I watched Dinner in America, which is like this new, like, not new, this is like indie cult gem. Like, TikTok people are freaking out over it. It feels like this generation's like Garden State, you know?
Oh, God.
So it's got that indie thing to it. I think it's really cute. I loved it. I love the premise of like this girl who's very neurodivergent. She's pretty much on the spectrum, and she's like all she wants.
She's retarded.
All she wants to do is go and see her favorite like hardcore band called PsyOps, PsyOp, and then kind of like I really. I would pair this with like Hesher, and I'm a big fan of Hesher. That movie with Joseph Gordon-Levitt. I don't know if you've seen it.
I've heard of that.
Yeah, I love that movie. I saw.
I've heard of this one too. Like, yeah.
Yeah, and it's kind of like that. This really chaotic, anarchistic dude who kind of just crashes into this girl's life and like wants to stay, and then ends up kind of, you know, falling for her. And there's a huge plot twist. He ends up
living with her with no job,
essentially, right? A little bit like that. That's me. But the movie is very. exaggerated, where it's almost like a parody, you know. It feels very surreal, and it's over the top with some of its acting, and Kyle Gallner just knocks out of the park with it, and the movie got me choked up in a few scenes, and I just think it's like a, you know, like your R-rated version of like a Juno or like a Nicanor Infinite playlist, very like indie rom-com teenager, but like on an R-rated level, and it's done incredibly well, and Kyle Gallner is going to be starring in this director's next film, Caroline or something like that. I don't know, but I think Dinner of America is cool. It's like a punk rock romance indie comedy thing, you know. Yeah, it's fun, it's chaotic. And then Courtney's never seen a little film called There Will Be Blood.
Oh yes.
So we sat down.
This guy texted Courtney
crazy.
And he's like
crazy.
Well, he's dude, like, I was
Courtney mad. Finally agreed to watch No Country for Old Men or There Will Be Blood. You know, so no, that's all I'm gonna preface it with, which is fucking. This is big news.
Yeah, and I was like, you know, I love both movies, and there is, and I wasn't sure, like, is there an argument to be made over one over the other?
No,
I was gonna do There Will Be Blood, but I'm also like, what if this is my one chance? Like, is there an argument to be made to do one over the other?
Yes,
you know. And yeah, always. there, and I obviously chose There Will Be Blood, and I wanted to make sure like I was making the right decision.
You chose
and you know,
There Will Be Blood over anything is the good choice.
Right, yeah. So I obsessed over this movie when it came out. Like, I'm sure like many others, I've seen it so many times, but I took like a huge break. Like, I haven't seen this movie in, it feels like, 6, 7, 8 years.
Oh, nice.
And watching it at home, and I had the Sennheisers on. She had her Sennheisers on. Were you on
edibles?
Yes.
Fuck!
I was like... And I'm like, dude, she was locked in that first 15 minutes. Like, no dialogue, the music.
Johnny Greenwood's fucking score.
It's fucking crazy. And she was like... That is a 10 out of 10 movie. Like, she was blown the fuck away. Because she's only seen one Daniel Day-Lewis movie. And she's a history nerd, so she loved Lincoln. So that's all she knows. And
she loved this whole, like, the time period.
Yeah. And then, you know, like, she's like, what the fucking oil? You know, I showed her, you know, we saw Killers of the Flower Moon. I'm sure she doesn't want to see another oil movie ever again. Nah, so it took, like, you know, like a year of convincing.
Because anytime you're trying to sell someone on a movie.
Yeah.
Right? Oh, wait a minute. I'm going to pause to see if we're even recording.
Yeah, we're recording. It's just the theme song caught up to where we were.
That's okay. That's okay. No, but anytime you're trying to tell someone a movie, their first question is, what's it about? It's like, it's about an oil baron who has issues with a local guy trying to start a church. Like, no, it's not.
And it's crazy to think that this movie, it can be reduced to like a couple of plot beats and that's it. Like, there's so much that goes on and so little that goes on at the same time. Like, it's really just like he gets oil. There's a son, and then this pastor. There's a little back and forth, and it's over. But man, this like how it breaks up these chapters of this guy's life, and fucking Daniel Day-Lewis is insane. And I forgot to bring it up in the pre-show, but dude, Daniel Day-Lewis just came out of retirement after 17 years.
To do a movie with his son.
Yeah.
Or his son's directing it, and he wrote the screenplay. Yeah, that's
I mean, pretty good. I mean, if he's coming out of retirement, I mean, it's going to be fucking something, you know? And people are losing their shit. Like, all the cinephiles are like, I'm excited. I'm very excited.
I mean, yeah.
Yeah, and I, you know, I'm not saying I'm a Daniel Day-Lewis fan. Like, I love Last Mohicans. I love There Will Be Blood.
You can say that.
No, I am, but I haven't seen all of his stuff to back it up. Like, I haven't seen Phantom Thread yet. Now, My Left Foot, you know.
You didn't see My Left Foot?
No, and I haven't seen Phantom Thread.
That's fucking good.
Yeah.
And I mean, Paul Thomas Anderson, when you see, I mean, that range.
That was his last movie before he retired. Yeah.
Yeah, check dude. That out. In the Name of the Father?
I've seen There Will Be Blood, obviously. I've seen Last Mohicans. I've seen that You've a dozen
Kings
times.
You've seen Kings of New York.
Yes.
And Hail the Butcher.
Gangs of New York, yeah. Loved him Kings as the of Kings of New York. I've seen The Crucible.
That's
you
Christopher
know.
Walken, King of New York. fucking dude, I'd highly recommend In the Name of the Father. It's a true story. It's about Ireland and England in the 70s. There's late 60s, early 70s. There's the IRA is doing a bunch of terrorist bombings and all that good stuff, and rightfully so. No, I'm just kidding. Not rightfully so. No, but he gets falsely accused and framed as a terrorist bomber along with several members of his family.
Oh, I've seen clips of the IRA movie. Yeah.
It's fucking insane. Yeah. Great movie. Great fucking Hell yeah. movie. And he's great in it. And it's also, when you watch that and you watch There Will Be Blood, you can see that's him in his native accent with an Irish accent. Speaking in a register that's like two octaves
he's
above.
Irish?
He's Irish.
I don't even know what
he's Irish, and
I don't
he
know
speaks
what his...
in at least two octaves above Daniel Plainview.
That's crazy. Like, I don't even know what his
like. He's down there. He's more up here.
He's one of those actors you don't see him in the public light so as much, so you don't even know what his fucking normal voice sounds like. You know?
Yeah, man. I'm a total fucking fanboy.
Yeah.
For that guy. You know, if you go on YouTube and look at his acceptance speech for There Will Be Blood, and he thanks fucking Heath Ledger, who had died that year, and you could hear his super thick Irish accent too, which is fucking cool. It makes the performance that much more fucking ridiculous. Mm. He disappears into these people.
Yeah.
You know.
So yeah, I mean that's all I've seen, and just a lot of video games. Yeah.
Nope. Speaking of which, there's that new game that came out in the last couple days that's like a fucking Kill Knight.
Kill Knight, yeah.
Dude, I had just found out about that, and then I went on our little game chat place on our Discord, which you can join. You can get access to if you go to www.patreon.com/whogoestherepodcast. Yeah. You can also get... you can get access to exclusive episodes. You can get access to access.
Exclusive.
And a bunch of fucking bonus content. Like for this episode on the front end, like Jacob had mentioned, we talk about Speak No Evil, the American remake that we were fucking trashing for forever before it came out.
Yeah.
And we talk about Francis Ford Coppola's Megalopolis, which is fucking, it's something else, as Jacob said. But patreon.com/whogoestherepodcast. It's $1 a month, $3 a month, $5 a month, $10 a month. There's a dude who's giving $2,000 a month.
Dude, it's crazy.
It's fucking
crazy. I'm able to pay my mortgage with just this one guy.
Yes,
it's crazy.
Exactly. So as long as we retain him,
I'm good.
We're good.
I don't have to work.
Exactly.
but we've got a couple notable shout outs this week.
Oh, good.
Michael Shero, he's been with us before. He's back. Is back in the Patreon family.
Oh, he had left?
For a little bit.
Oh!
And then also, Kendrick, dude. We got K-Dot, dude.
Yeah, I saw that. And he's doing like the $1 a month.
Yeah, what the hell, man?
Kendrick Lamar's giving us $1 a month.
No. But seriously, Kendrick Ford, thank you for joining the family. We appreciate you.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you. Yeah. A lot of video games, you said.
Kill Knight, man. It's, you know, this is Paul's jam, my older brother. He's big into anything that's very arcadey, has high scores involved, and like me and him get very competitive. Like we're very friendly towards each other. We play a lot of co-op games, but like there's certain games where we get really competitive and try to beat each other's scores. And usually Paul always beats me. And right now I'm trying to, he's like top 2000 in the globe with Kill Knight with his scores. And
what?
And I'm trying to fucking beat his shit right now. And it is a incredibly difficult top down twin stick shooter, Kill Knight.
I love that shit.
It's like $8 to $10, $13 at the most, I think, on Steam. I forgot how much, but it's an indie gem.
If all of that is too esoteric, gamer speak for you. It's fucking Smash TV. That's
essentially, yeah, yes, exactly. And that was a big one. And Paul and I growing up on Super Nintendo and the arcade, Smash TV. The Paul put like 20, 30 hours in the demo, a limited time demo.
You know what this just tells me, dude? Fuck AAA gaming.
100%.
Indie gaming is where it's at.
Honestly, the indie games that came out this year are honestly in my game of the year. Like, fucking the Kill Knight's one of them for sure, and there's a few others, man. But fucking AA and indie games, that's where it's been at, man. Like a lot of this AAA shit, huge flops, lots of review bombing. That's why you need a Nintendo
Switch, dude. Your boys just released some content this week, right? The new Diablo 4 bullshit.
This coming Monday, that's what I was hinting at when I was like, I really wanted to take a day off for work, but they like needed me. So I was like, fuck, I wanted to take a day off for this. It's the new expansion, and they essentially changed the entire game. In the end, they're like, fuck.
Did they make it into a good one?
They made it into Diablo 3, which, you know, if you don't like Diablo 3, then yeah, you won't like it. But it's like a safe bet. And when Diablo 4 came out, they wanted to make it like Diablo 2. And they wanted to make this cool, slow grind, dark, ominous RPG. And then in the end, people just want to fucking kill hordes of demons.
And get cool loot.
And get cool loot. And they're like, all right, let's just make it Diablo 3 again. So Diablo 4 is now just Diablo 3. And that's what this new expansion is. And I'm looking forward to it because I love Diablo 3. I love all Diablo games. And but, you know, the franchise, you know, it's kind of yikes. It's embarrassing to be a Diablo fan right now.
It's kind of like the Alien franchise a little bit, right? Like, it's kind of...
No? What now?
Oh, no, never mind.
What are you talking about? speaking of Alien franchise, not really. But, dude, have you been playing the new Fortnite season at all?
A little bit. Yeah, because I'm about to finish my battle pass for Diablo, and then I want to jump into Fortnite because I bought it and I never got
the Dr. Doom shit is so fun, man.
It's dope. I've played it, yeah.
Have you fucked around with Doom Island when it spawns?
No.
Bro, okay, so Micah fucking loses his shit. So we're generally playing like the three of us, me, Quinn, and Micah. And you know the island that spawns randomly?
Is the floating one?
The floating
one. Oh, yeah, I've been on that, yeah.
But every once in a while, it is Doom Island. Mm. And if you get to it, you can actually turn into a super-powered Dr. Doom. It's fucking crazy.
Yeah.
It triggers Micah's autism like you wouldn't believe, bro. He fucking loses it.
Yeah.
And he's like, I'm gonna shoot these guys, and I'm like, fucking do it, dude.
You're about to fucking ruin Dr. Doom like they ruined the Xenomorph, though. You know what I mean? Any day now, we're gonna get the first look of
RDJ. Already. It's been done multiple times.
Again.
That fucking guy from Nip Tuck was an awful Dr. Doom.
Honestly, like, as bad as it sounds, Fortnite is probably like the most accurate portrayal of Doom.
Jesus than Christ.
Any of the adaptations. Yeah, I want to play it some more so I can get the Doom skin, you know.
Well, you got to get on it, man. You got till November.
November is when the cutoff? Okay, yeah.
That's good. Doom skin. Mm. I like that, dude. That's a band, dude. Are you you want to go next?
Not really. We didn't really watch. We've been watching some random shit. We watched Bloodline on Netflix. We are watching Bloodline.
Ah,
on Netflix.
Dateline. Yes.
It's all right. It's
this Bloodline. Like, what is it?
It's kind of an odd duck. It's got Ben Mendelsohn in it, who I really like as an actor. I think he's dope.
Yeah.
But he's playing this like really oddball.
He should have been Dr. Doom.
Yeah.
He could be a good Dr. Doom. But he's playing this really oddball brother in this like family that has a hotel in Florida, and it's just their like family dynamic that they can't quite figure out. There's a dead sister that you slowly find out about. We're like halfway through the first season.
Do you do like a, is it like a randomizer where it's just like it picks something for you?
Yeah. And it's okay. I'm enjoying it so far, but like Ben Mendelsohn's character is so fucking weird that it's hard to be empathetic towards this guy who's gotten like shit on by his family his entire life, but it's okay. Have you guys heard of this show called From?
Yes. On, MGM.
Yeah.
Right, and it was on Amazon Prime for a minute.
What did you hear about this
There's
show?
The black dude from The Matrix is in there. Well, that doesn't help. There's quite a few of them.
It's Michael from
Lost.
From Lost.
He's also in The Matrix.
Yeah, but...
I mean, the sequels.
People going to know him from...
Lost.
Yeah, well,
I've seen like maybe the first five episodes of season one.
What did
one.
You think of this show?
You're all, it's Lawrence Fishburne.
I do want to finish the first season at least because I like the premise. It feels very Stephen King, you know? And yeah. But I when I see like they're already like at a third season coming up, I'm like, how far can you stretch out a show that takes place in one small ass town?
Yeah, so let me build this premise for you, Rhett. So the main idea is that it's this town that people get stuck in while they're driving. So they'll be driving somewhere.
Like a Bermuda Triangle type situation.
Kind of. Yeah. But there's no geography. The where you are geographically doesn't matter. Like you can start off in Florida and end up in the town. You can start off in New York and end up in the town. Like just depends on like what you're doing in your life that causes you to go to the town.
Like Lost, dude.
Yeah. And then at night, these fucking goofy monsters come out that are like vampire demon things.
Oh, I'm super in.
But they have like people skins where they're
skinwalkers.
They're kind of skinwalkery.
Yeah. Like let me in, you know, or I'm your grandma, you know, let me in. It's like the show opens, I think, with a little girl getting ganged by the grandma, yeah.
And so what Jacob's saying is the premise of the show is really interesting, but by 2/3 of the way through that first season, I'm seriously, where the fuck is this going?
Yeah.
We finished season two, and season three just released, like, just started releasing, like, a couple weeks ago. And season two ends on the shittiest,
really?
Cliffhanger. Mm. And I understand why it's reviewed so poorly. Like, people do not like this second season, because it's basically trash. It's rough. I would say I'll probably finish season three only because of I am who I am.
You're 2/3 into it.
Yeah. but I like the first episode is not indicative. Even the first three episodes are not indicative of the quality of the rest of the season.
You're like, how many mysterious things on this town can you uncover?
Yeah, and not only that, but it's doing this really bizarre goosebumpy thing where there's different sections of the town they've got spooky secrets, and then this part of the town's got spooky secrets, and then there's a guy in chains who's got a spooky secret. I don't recommend the show.
And it's still the dude from Lost, he's the main guy?
Yeah, he's the sheriff of the town. Yeah. I don't know what his role in the third season is, because he has kind of a thing where, like, oh, he's going to be dead, in the next couple episodes. But, no, he's cool. He's good. He's fine. But,
It's a weird show to choose to renew.
It's a bizarre little show, man. Yeah. It's got, like, if you ever watched that show Jericho.
I know of it, yeah.
It's got that same kind of goofy, like, 90s sci-fi feel to it, like 90s sci-fi channel show feel to it, which is, in some ways, it's a little, like, endearing, but it loses, it wears out its welcome super, super quickly. I can't, in good conscience,
recommend
this show.
People really, really like it online.
It's bizarre. I know people do like it. It's weird.
Hmm.
I don't know.
Well, so do you recommend it or
no?
Oh
no!
All right.
I think where people get fucked up is like the first three seasons are actually the first three episodes are actually pretty interesting because they're fleshing out, you know, these people getting stuck in this town. But after that, I'm like, just stay in the fucking house. What the fuck are you doing?
Anyway, yeah.
Dope.
Yeah.
I'm kind of curious about it, honestly, but. I watched a bunch of shit. I'm not going to mention all of it
because
we have fucking time for everything, but I do want to mention some highlights. Watched a little movie in theaters. Corley Fargue's follow-up to Revenge.
Totally forgot to mention that one, yeah.
Yeah, and Jacob saw it too. It's called The Substance. I will say nothing else. We've said a lot on Discord.
It's a must, you know, do episode for sure.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a must. Can't say anything.
Yeah.
Holy shit. Have you seen it yet, Jorge?
No, I'll probably go this weekend.
I look forward to doing an episode on that one. I would definitely recommend seeing it sooner than later. So if it, while it's in theaters. Yeah, honestly, man. I did rewatches of a few things. You know, it's an election year. One of the things I like to watch like every 2 years, and I think Sophia is beginning to understand that I'm cyclical with this stuff, with the autism, is JFK. And she's like, we just watched it. I'm like, we watched it in 2022.
Is that Oliver Stone?
Yeah.
I've always wanted to watch that movie.
You haven't seen that?
I heard it's fucking dope, yeah.
It's fucking dope as fuck.
Yeah.
The feeling, the editing is insane. It's like fucking, and you'll see the influence on stuff like Oppenheimer and all that. And watching it post Oppenheimer is great for the filmmaking and also the subject matter. And if you want to, like, you know when you watch Unsolved Mysteries and you get that feeling of just how fucking spooky things are? It does that for me, because even if it's like going in, it's lunging into paranoia and conjecture, the atmosphere gets so strong, you're just like, wow, like, we're fucked. And I love that shit.
That is cool, yeah.
Yeah, and it's just, it was great. And then I watched a movie called, this is a good watch with Megalopolis. It's called Gaudi with John Travolta.
Oh my God, why would you watch?
Because it's considered one of the worst movies of the last 10 years, and it is fucking fantastically bad. Like, just awful,
that's
dude.
That's insane.
Dude, it's fucking hilarious. You listen to me, and listen to me good. You're never going to meet another guy like me if you live to be 5,000. That's the end of the movie. And then cue Pitbull for the credits. Like, this is the kind of movie we're dealing with. It's fucking insane, dude. So watch that. No, if you're a fan of bad cinema.
Highly recommended.
It's a must watch if you want to watch some bad cinema. I mean, it's just fucking insanely bad. Inept in every way. Let me see here. Oh, From Hell. I'm a big fucking fan.
It's a good flick.
Yeah, I'm glad Jorge is a fan of this movie, too.
He's like, I'm glad you're actually sane.
No, well, no, I do. Like, no, we've talked about it before. It's come up a few times. And it's the Hughes brothers. They did Dead Presidents and then decided to adapt an Alan Moore graphic novel about fucking Jack the Ripper and the Masons and London and all sorts of fucking crazy shit. It's atmospheric. The cinematography, the set design is fucking amazing. Johnny Depp's on a weird kick at that time with Ninth Gate, with Polanski and this, yeah. And fucking Fear and Loathing, like within 2 years of each other. And his next movie after that was when he became a pirate. So, no, but highly recommend. It's gotten a lot stronger, like not cult following, but a stronger following over the years. Still, the critics are pretty mean to it, and I don't understand. I really dig it. Highly recommend that one. It was a fun rewatch.
And Heather Graham is
she's good in
pretty
that.
Fucking great in that movie.
She is, and dude, yes, some fucking, like, obviously it's a fictionalized thing, and it's a opportunity to analyze all sorts of things and buzzwords that are today, but these are not buzzwords back when it happened. Is you know, the patriarchy and treatment of fucking sex workers and women in general. And the medical field, and like freaking how they construct these big elaborate fucking distractions, to create social narratives.
I also like, and I'm not comparing the two movies in the least, but I also like that bit they do with the killer, where you kind of get that thing where they did in Zodiac,
yeah,
where they're interacting with the killer and who you think is the killer, and you're like, you're in danger right now,
absolutely,
get the fuck out of there,
yeah, the sense of unease, absolutely,
oh nice,
okay. And it's Ian Holm, otherwise known as Rook.
Ooh,
no. Hey, fucking, I love that movie. I think it's one of the more underrated, probably genre films of this century, honestly. Like, but anyway, and then after that, like, she wanted to actually know a little bit more about Alan Moore, which was fucking great. And I nerded out and went through all my Alan Moore graphic novels.
Yeah.
And she's not like she's read them, but they're still sitting on our coffee table in the living room. And she's like, you need to put those back. And it's like, no, I don't. Like, they're good right there.
You guys watched Watchmen, didn't you?
We watch Watchmen. Who watches The Watchmen? I do.
Constantly.
And again, like, fucking Alan Moore, I love the guy. He's one of my fucking ultimate heroes. I think the guy's a fucking genius and all that. And he denounced the movie and all of that stuff. But I think it's as good as you could get for an adaptation of that source material. And if she's not going to read the thing, and she had seen it years before when it came out, but didn't understand the context. And that's my favorite Zack Snyder movie. Not everything hits exactly like it should. It doesn't hit as well as it does in the comic with the dialogue. But visually, and then when you get the general heft of the fucking ideas.
It gets all the points across.
It really does. And like the fucking bleakness, and not even just bleakness, but honestly, the kind of maturity, the kind of pessimism and maturity it has with that ending. That's like, hey, this is not going to work unless we.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's so convincing that they're like, yeah, kill fucking Rorschach, you know, which is like, you know what I mean? Like, it's fucking, it's totally unlike any of the endings you've seen with movies like that.
Yeah.
Anyway, it was interesting to watch it post like the huge success of Marvel and all that. So we enjoyed that. What else here? Volcano with Tommy Lee Jones.
So good.
It's on Hulu.
Did you also watch Dante's Peak?
No. That's a mistake. Fucked up. It's on Hulu. It was bad in 1997 when I was making out in the theater during it. And, and guess what? It's fucking awful now.
It's worse.
Dude, it's so bad.
Yeah.
And the director of it directed The Bodyguard and a little movie called Threads, which is crazy. Because I recognized the name and I'm like, who is that? And I Wikipedia and I'm like, God damn. And I remembered Wikipedia it when we did the Threads episode, which I love that movie, by the way. Highly recommend. It'll ruin your fucking evening. But like, I remembered looking that up for that episode, and I didn't want to bring up Mick Jackson, is I think his name. I didn't want to bring up what I saw in the episode.
You're like, I'm not gonna talk.
I'm not about gonna it. Mention that he did The Bodyguard and Volcano later. It's so weird. Anyway, that's.
I mean, The Bodyguard. God, I don't think I've seen it. I don't think I've seen it as an adult.
No, me either. Don't even need to really mention that, except for the aside that it was the guy who did Threads. And then fucking went down a fucking total De Palma rabbit hole thing.
You did what I wanted to do for years, and I haven't still done it. Yeah.
Yeah, so Blowout with Travolta is a fucking near masterpiece, in my opinion. This shit was amazing. You would love that fucking movie, Jake.
I'm looking forward to it,
There's the conspiratorial thing. His style in it is fucking great. I believe it's 80 or 81. It's a sound effects guy. It's Travolta, and it's some of the better acting from Travolta I've ever seen. It's young Travolta, and I think pre-Scientology Travolta, which helps. But anyway, he's a sound designer for slasher movies. And it starts out with a great fucking like intro. I don't even want to tell you more. And he ends up witnessing he's out like recording new sounds for movies out in nature, and he ends up witnessing a crime. But he's recording it, so he only has the sound. But it's so it plays with like what's enough for evidence and stuff like that. Yeah. And there's a lot of paranoid
thriller.
There's a whole thing that De Palma does with Red and Blue, and it's during an election cycle. And like the Red and Blue fucking thing he does, like it's fun just to watch every scene. I know it sounds like such a simple, goofy thing to point out, but it's fun to even see how seamlessly and organically he incorporates the Red and Blue color scheme in every fucking thing.
Yeah.
So I love that. And then I had showed that to Sophia and she really enjoyed it. And then we were talking about De Palma and the fucking New Hollywood people and Spielberg and all that. And so we watched Sisters, which I had never seen, which is like a 71 De Palma movie or 73, right around there, early 70s. Dude, and that's like his first thriller, like his first proper thriller. And that movie is fucking bonkers, dude. Like it's dated, obviously. He does some split screen shit in there that's absolutely crazy. It actually feels very, very similar to the later slashers and the Giallo movies.
Yeah, I was gonna. Is De Palma Italian?
He's Italian.
He is? Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, because he has that very Giallo, you know, thing to it.
Well, and dude, the guy is so sleazy, like in such like a very stylish way, and like the stuff he's doing with the fucking. His camera stuff, even when the movie's bad, like Snake Eyes, that movie's fucking awful. But his camera is like, the shit is ridiculous. There's a tracking shot in that's like 15 minutes with Nicolas Cage. Anyway, we watched Phantom of the Paradise, which I'd always heard about. Big failure musical fucking farce type thing that came out in 74. It was a big failure when it came out. Got a huge cult following. It's considered a very seminal film. That was fucking cool. It's very dated as well, but a lot of it, some of it, it's like you're seeing this guy surrounded by electronics in all black with a mask on and fucking synthesizers, and you're like, dude, this is like 20 years fucking early.
Yeah, they do like midnight cult screenings like Rocky Horror, you know, and I've seen Rocky Horror like half a dozen times in theaters at midnight, but like I really want to see Phantom of the Paradise at like a midnight cult screening. Like,
so do I.
Yeah.
It was huge, like in France, that movie was huge, like from the get go, and they said it's still like they have these huge sold out screenings there, which is damn. Cool. So
did you guys dip your toes into '90s De Palma?
No, we didn't get there yet. Holy shit. We did Dress to Kill. Dress to Kill. Have you seen that one?
No. So my dream, I wanted to do a little triple feature marathon with Courtney, and it's going to be Dress to Kill, Body Double, and Blowout.
Dude, good choice.
Yeah,
and like Dress to Kill is our favorite so far. Of this crop. Because obviously the guy did Carrie, and he did Scarface, and he did Untouchables, which I fucking love, but it's kind of strange, actually, looking at De Palma's, his run of these movies. You can see that it's a De Palma movie, but it doesn't feel like one.
Dude, this is crazy. He goes Carlito's Way, Mission Impossible, Snake Eyes, Mission to Mars.
No, that's the bad times. Wow. That's the dark times. Yeah, but, Dress to Kill was our favorite. And it's fucking of these. Okay. Dude, it's so fucking dope. Like, it's so crazy. And Michael Caine is in it. Oh, and I don't... The less said, the better. Like, I think Blowout has more ambitious stuff visually. But Dress to Kill is a bonkers-ass fucking idea.
Okay.
And then I'd always heard about the De Palma documentary, the A24 one. It's on Max right now, so if you want to watch it, if you haven't seen it. It's De Palma talking about his entire filmography in chronological order, is what it turns out to be. And his upbringing.
Oh, damn.
And it's fucking great. And he's great. He's a blast to fucking listen to. And he talks about a little bit, of course, the early days with Spielberg and Francis Ford Coppola.
He's still alive?
Yeah.
De Palma, okay.
Yeah, and so he talks about, straight up, he mentions when the directors, most of them, when they get into their 60s, you know, he said their most directors, their best works, their 30s, 40s, 50s. He's no exception, and now we know for sure Francis Ford Coppola is definitely no exception. But, when I watched Megalopolis, I was just thinking, like, damn, I wish fucking I could hear what De Palma thinks about this shit. You know, because
is he retired, De Palma?
Basically. Yeah, okay. Yeah, he probably won't work again. Like, his last couple didn't really do great stuff. But, dude, yeah, it's been a great fucking thing getting familiar with those. I get what people are talking about with De Palma now in the late 70s and early 80s period of his work. But, yeah, I look forward to watching more of the guy, and so does Sophia. She loves it.
Wait till you get to Snake Eyes, dude.
Body Double looks fucking insane and very slashery.
Yeah.
This guy fucking kills women with a fucking huge, like, fucking screw gun.
Yeah, that's why when Maxine came out, a lot of people were like, please be, like, super De Palma, you know?
Exactly.
And it kind of, you know, faltered there. It wasn't exactly what people expected.
It faltered altogether. No, I'm just kidding. Yeah, I just re-listed that episode, and we mentioned mentioned the De Palma thing. Yeah, that movie, this Body Double movie is next, and that shit looks fucking insane.
So I got to throw in Sisters on my little marathon then. Okay.
Yeah.
So
it's split with critics and all that, but as far as De Palma fans, like, they love this Body Double shit. But very film... Yeah, his influences. Film noir, Hitchcock.
Mm-hmm.
You know, horror.
Yeah.
Anyway.
He kind of brought the giallo to America, essentially.
Definitely. Even if it was unintentional. Like, it's just his stylistic... His temperament.
Yeah.
And he's a total pervert.
Hell yeah.
Clearly he's a total fucking pervert. And I don't mean that like Diddy. I mean like he's, you know.
Is it like Paul Verhoeven, like eroticism?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's... a little bit, yeah. And he's a lot more... I think you can watch De Palma movies and think about how regressive it is until you realize actually how progressive it is. He's actually being quite critical of masculinity, even in stuff like Sisters. A lot of his movies feature women, especially sex workers, in these very perilous situations with men and voyeurism and all this stuff. The men are never fucking particularly, I shouldn't say never, rarely strong, upright people. They're very, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and then if you watch the documentary, it talks about his upbringing, and you're like, oh, that's why, you know.
Interesting. Okay.
Cool shit, though.
Yeah.
Cool.
That's it, dude. That's the De Palma podcast. Sorry about that.
All right. Well, we'll be right back. We're going to talk about a movie
that De Palma would love.
You know what, dude? You're right. I think given the opportunity, they would drag us through concrete.
Yeah. Ooh, we just got Jacob's attention. That guy's got a new movie coming up, right? With Vince Vaughn again, I think.
That's what I heard. That's all
Zoller.
I know. Yeah. It's about time. I know the shit with CineState kind of fucked up his reputation, maybe. I don't know.
Just let it blow over. Yeah. Don't even bring
exactly,
it up.
Exactly, yeah.
Because I want to see what that guy does. Because he fucks, but this guy doesn't even like Bone Tomahawk.
I do not like Bone Tomahawk.
Really?
We're back!
I'm sorry.
Just want to throw that in there.
That's a good enough spot for me. Whew. Oh, man. Well, it's been a little bit since I watched the movie, but...
Me too.
The Who Goes Our Podcast watched 2024's Strange Darling, directed by J.T. Molnar, also written by that goof, starring Willa Fitzgerald, Kyle Gallner, and that's it. And a bunch of other supporting actors, but if we're talking about who's starring in it, that's it.
Starring?
Let's start with Jacob. Jacob, what'd you think of this little film?
Oh, yeah, so... this movie kind of came out of nowhere. I love the marketing. It kind of didn't give away too much, so you know, it forces the audience to go in blind, which is very important for this. And I do have to preface that I think you have to, if you care about seeing this movie, definitely watch it first, you know, because we have to go into full spoiler territory for this for sure.
Yeah, we should give like a little preface right when we'll give one more once we give our initial thoughts. How about that? Yeah.
So
yeah.
I think ultimately, as an exploitation film, if you would consider it, you know, the film that I think it's effective, like the pacing, the editing, non-linear narrative. It's intentionally heavy-handed, and the performances, you know, like super top tier for a genre film. I think this is one of my more favorite films of the year. I really appreciate and respect how bold it is, but I think it's bold to a fault. And I think the movie can sometimes, even from the first 2 minutes, it can come off as a little edgelordy, a little pretentious at times. I think...
What's wrong with that, dude?
If you're looking at the movie as some sort of like clever examination of like gender politics, which it kind of dips its toe in, I think it kind of trips up and during the third act and a couple scenes, specifically if you want to, you know, really zero in on a couple scenes. And I think it unintentionally comes off as like some fucking like incel raid shit. And some moments, I'll get into more detail about it. Cause I'll say, like, you know, I've saw this movie in a pretty big, crowded theater, and Courtney was the only woman there, and she was very deeply like uncomfortable during a couple scenes in the third act, and kind of some of the rhetoric and some of the messaging maybe the director unintentionally is trying to tell the crowd. And it was really interesting, and I was doing a lot more reading on it, and I was like, man, there's a lot of people that were kind of put off by some moments in this film. But what's interesting, I think, on a technical level...
So good. It worked. So it worked then.
Right?
Good. Good. No, good.
We'll talk
more
about it. In a horror movie, dude? No. Yeah.
So the movie is definitely challenging the audience. It's confrontational. And I got to say, on just even a technical level, like, it's directing prowess. Fucking Giovanni Ribisi's cinematography.
Yeah, what the...
I was like, holy shit. Like, I'm talking this movie from minute one. I was like, wow, this is something else. You know, it wears its heart on its sleeve. It's got a little Tarantino. It's definitely got some Texas Chainsaw in it. You know, Tarantino's Massacre.
It's got some DNA. Okay.
You know, but, you know, I don't need to know things like... You know, I'm getting more into specifics here. I'll wrap this up. But, like, you know, I don't need to know that it's fucking 35mm. You know what I mean? Like, there's 60 movies that came out last year on Kodak film 35mm. Like, I don't care if you filmed in 35mm, you know?
It ain't that special.
You don't have to put it in your film in the opening credits. Shit like that. Like, that's when I'm like... What is
well,
this?
Do you have to put Big Chap in the beginning of your this, new Alien movie?
Well, do you have to? Did they have the line "Get away from her, you bitch" in this movie?
Yeah, exactly. Do they have to put a deep fake version of Ian Holm in this movie?
I agree.
Despite like I have some heavy criticism I'll talk about later, but like despite that, and I do have a bone to pick with some of the stuff that happens in the final 20 minutes. Despite that, I was so impressed with this movie. And, you know, I could see it being in my top five, maybe top three horror films of the year. I was really impressed with it. I was seeing it twice now. I rewatched it today before the recording.
It's out for streaming now. Huh?
Yeah, it's on VOD right now. I love the pacing. I think there is really smart with some of the tactical decisions of this film. And it's a high recommend still for me.
I agree, like, 100%. I think there are... There is a ton of, man, there's a ton of great content in this movie. I think the constant flip-flopping of expectations and delivery, I think, is fantastic. It never feels like heavy-handed when it comes to like, oh, we're going to give you another fucking twist, and then another fucking twist, and then another fucking... All of it feels very organic and very earned in this film.
It's not like Shyamalan, dude.
I mean, from the get, from like that whole like, are you a serial killer stuff, and then it kind of expands out from there. It expands out and then contracts and then expands out again and then contracts again. I really like this film, and let's talk about it more, please.
The movie is wild, but yeah, you mentioned. I'm not going to say specifics because we're going to do one more spoiler thing in a second, but the nonlinear narrative. With some Tarantino-esque type thing there.
Something you never would have expected going into it.
Yeah, very fucking well constructed and designed, really. Talk about subverting expectations, of course. Both leads fucking kill it. Like, both of them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Him and her. Great pacing.
He's quickly becoming one of my favorite character actors.
Absolutely.
He's fucking great.
He's one of the best genre actors right now. And then he was in Smile a couple years ago also. But the structure of it, I love the structure of it. It's this chapters. It has like quite a few chapters, which might be off-putting when you're right in the middle of something. And then you're like, oh, now we're going to skip over here. But it's totally fucking, it moves great. Yeah. You know? And then when it finally gets to like chapter 6 where things line up, you're like, fuck yeah, I really want to see. It's like watching a fucking, like, the feeling when you're streaming a series and you finally get to the middle of the season and you're like, shit's lining up. You have that about 45 minutes into this movie for its own little mini chapters.
Yeah, you kind of start putting the pieces together.
Absolutely. And all the little twists are pretty fucking thrilling to me. And also, like, it's super intelligent. Like, it's saying something and it's fucking entertaining.
Yeah. And the film would have been effective in a total linear timeline.
Yeah.
But, like, just to add just an extra little bit of oomph with the pacing, rearranging it, it worked. So well.
Absolutely. Yeah, it works. It's a lot more engaging that way, I think. And it helps with the kind of your, it delays the reveals.
Yes.
In a sense, right? Yeah. You get more context, right? It shows how context fucking matters.
It's edging you.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and then the editing, the music, I like the music a lot. And these jarring, lurid colors, like really like lurid, bright colors a lot of the time. Even in the evening scenes, there's some, it's almost De Palma-esque sometimes. But the cinematography, like you mentioned Giovanni Ribisi, and I mean that guy.
That's kind of out of nowhere.
And he's come so far too with being disabled and like, you know, doing the other sister, getting to finally portray himself as he actually is and then acting, and then to be a person with a disability and go from the acting and become a cinematographer.
If there's one actor to become a cinematographer, it's him.
He is one of the most actors.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I fucking really enjoy it, and I would be very surprised if it doesn't end up at least top five and maybe top three.
Yeah.
At this rate.
Yeah.
But, and yeah, came out of nowhere, like you said. And so from here on out, though, like, if you haven't watched it, it sounds like you know we'd recommend
it. You need to watch it on streaming officially.
Yeah, because you don't want this is one where I know we usually, a lot of time we don't give a fuck, but you really want to go into this one as blind as possible.
Yeah. The trailer, it's a guy chasing a woman, and that's all you know.
And we've told you that we think it's really good, and that's all you know.
Yeah. So come back.
Come back.
There you go.
And if you're like, oh, you said it was good and it sucked. Well, you're wrong. It's like, it's okay. Like, yeah, you're objectively wrong on all the things we mentioned.
If the three of us agree, you're fucked.
Yeah, pretty much. It's a bad fucking sign for you. It's a bad sign. Yeah,
if the three of us agree and you still didn't like it.
Yeah. Absolutely. Like, it's a real bad sign, dude. Because we don't agree on Romulus. And we don't. No, I'm just kidding. That's true. Enough Romulus. That's enough Romulus talk.
Doubt it, but
yeah.
No chance you stop.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I kind of want to go from the end and then.
You want to go non-linear with this?
Well, because I kind of want to get to what you're talking about, where you're towards the end, you feel like.
What I was kind of talking about?
The truck and stuff and how the guy's talking about.
It's the two cops.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, you know, we're going to full spoiler territory, but, you know, there is a plot twist. And I do think they were trying a little too hard to convince the audience that, you know, the Kyle Gallner is the antagonist in this film. But it is revealed, I'd say, at the halfway point that, you know, it's kind of, we're switching it. It's the female. She's the killer. She's a serial killer. And he's the victim. And then what you thought was a cat and mouse between Kyle Gallner chasing her, it's more like him trying to get a killer and track her down. And there is a specific scene towards the end with two cops that come across, what's her name? Ella Fitzgerald's character, mm-hmm. who is revealed to be a...
Ella Fitzgerald?
Is it Ella Fitzgerald?
Willa.
Willa Fitzgerald.
Oh,
Willow.
Ella Fitzgerald. I was like, damn.
I know. As soon as I said that, I was like, yeah, Willa Fitzgerald.
I'm sorry. Okay. I usually do shit like that. That one was crazy. Like, who the fuck is he talking about? 100 years old, right? I haven't seen the movie in like a month either. So I was like, whoa.
100-year-old singers in this shit, dude? What the fuck?
She's killing It's people? Revealed that she's this prolific serial killer called the Electric Lady, and now she's on the run.
Dope fucking name.
Fucking dope. Everything about it is fantastic. I loved every moment of it, and I still love the movie, even beginning to end. But there was one moment in the final act when two cops roll up on her, and to kind of get herself in the clear, she plays it off as if she's a rape victim.
Right.
And I kind of... I don't want to say I like, but like I was like, whoa, this is very ballsy, kind of bold for this director to kind of play it off as this crazy, vile antagonist now.
It shows off the advantage of women. That's what they've had to lean into.
Exactly. And it's very ballsy. And I respect in that regard. But like when you see it in a theater crowd, and I've got Courtney here and she's the only woman in this theater, and they have these like two dumb cops kind of roll in here, and they have this line of dialogue about basically like, do you? It kind of implies this rhetoric about like false rape reports, and it's like, I don't know if that's kind of the dialogue you want to have in a movie. And essentially, like, it can, I'm reducing it to this, but it's kind of like hanging this sign where it's like, hey, not all women are telling the truth about this. And I'm obviously oversimplifying it, but I kind of appreciate this change in this scenario, because it's nothing you've ever seen before in a film.
To me, it's an extension of the entire premise, which is it's the role reversal.
Yeah.
So the whole idea is the exception, not the rule.
Yeah.
So I'm okay with it. And also, not post-cancel culture, because we're still in it. Like, the whole fucking thing has done... It's great, obviously, that we're having this moment of awareness and coming to terms with the realities of this shit. Like, mm-hmm. absolutely. That being said, for the mere insinuation of... Like, if anyone is getting an insinuation of things without evidence, that sets an alarming precedent for anybody, regardless of gender. And so the thing is, like, what I liked about the scene, and I get, like, in the context you're saying it with a fucking, with your lady there in a theater full of men.
Yeah, and they're applauding at how naive the female cop was, because she ends up being reduced as a naive cop who's, like, the end of a punchline saying, hey, maybe, you know, don't trust all women, essentially. And well, it kind of doubles down on that, especially when you got, like, dialogue, like the male cop, like, oh, you fucking bitch.
Well,
and the whole theater's clapping. The whole theater's clapping. I'm like, yeah, fuck this dumb woman cop.
Which and that's like, playing on, and if you have a theater of guys there, yeah. It is playing on men's latent, and in some of their case overt, but most men's latent fucking... with misogyny.
Yeah.
They're like, yeah, fucking finally, yeah, finally. But it's actually playing it on you too there, you know, because it's that he was fucking right. Why didn't you listen to the guy? Yeah. Like I told you. And so it's the total subverting expectations thing. Like,
no, it was just weird because I think it can imply this thing for like, men who are scared of the Me Too movement and this whole like, you know, fucking, you know, some women can lie, you know, don't trust all women. Like, it's not saying that overtly, but it's unintentionally implied.
I mean, this could just,
come on.
Are you judging this mostly based on your audience that you had in your theater?
It's very, no, very it, much so.
It was, well, first I was like, why are people clapping? And then I could see Courtney like kind of, like really uncomfortable, like she was into the whole movie, and then this theme comes on, and she was like totally taken out of it, and I think it's just this whole kind of unintentional like just rhetoric they're kind of pushing about like it's almost like what was it like I read this like this Reddit thread, and like one person was like, you know, it's like hanging a sign on their around their neck just saying feminism, am I right? You know, like it's saying.
I didn't get that from
it. But yeah, yeah. So I guess what I'm trying to get at is it I don't think that's what the film is saying.
No.
So
I think there was like a tone deaf approach in this one moment, and like and it has nothing to even do with like Willa Fitzgerald's character trying to
again, it's literally about the exception.
Yeah.
Which is the whole reason the fucking subverting expectation works.
I think subverting the genre expectations is brilliant, but yeah. I think like trying to subvert like some sort of like gender stereotypes, I don't think he nailed it.
So I think what I'm hearing is that the audience that this is for, it's too subtle of a thing, and the general audience will just be like, yuck, yuck, not all women kind of deal?
No, I think what I hear Jacob saying is that, like, it was kind of ghoulish to hear these men clapping about fucking... Yeah. The lesbian girl boss to shut up.
Yeah, I do feel like it was. Yeah, it was such
a... You dumb bitch, he says.
I don't disagree, but I mean, it You don't feel like that was more holding up a mirror to these guys?
It's holding up a mirror, and whether they how they respond to it is how they respond to it. The other thing is, dude, look, the inversion of this is slasher movies where you have women constantly being victims. Okay, yeah. So no, I'm not. I mean, that's tone deaf. Like, but I mean, like, and they're always sexualized, and they're always disposable fodder, and you always have the fucking final girl, and she's usually a virgin, like Megalopolis.
Yeah,
and no, I'm just kidding. No, and then so anyway, no, dude, like, I'm not gonna come. Like, anyway, I don't want to go down that rabbit hole. The thing for me is context again. When the cop shows up there, his reasons for not liking what the woman cop and the other cop are doing are from proper procedure. Mm-hmm. They don't know the context of these things. They're making a bunch of assumptions.
Yeah.
Which you don't want to fucking do. And this is why. And if your identity politics have overridden your procedures that you're doing for life and death things, your identity politics are fucking dumb.
Yeah.
It's a life and death scenario. You don't know the context. You don't want to be like, believe women without the context here.
Yeah, yeah.
You don't know enough in this situation. And it's not you can't trust all women. You can't trust all people, period.
Yeah, it's a humanity thing, not necessarily.
You can't. And also, it's also very sympathetic because, dude, am I like, oh, I'm mad at her. Like, she's the killer. She's like, She's the badass. She's the badass serial killer. I'm not saying, what do you mean? Yeah. But like...
Well, and I have no issue with how what she did in her character. Like, she's the villain here and all that. So I think...
It's when identity politics have gone wrong.
Yeah, I think it's literally... It's really... And that's what I'm saying. Like, it's really just one brief moment, but it's really the interaction between the two cops. Like, I honestly, the dialogue between them could have been completely left out. I think her trying to say, like, oh, the hero of the story who ends up not being the kind of like hero, anti-hero of the story, Kyle Gallner, you know, and saying like, oh, he raped me. I'm like, that's fine. I think in the context of the story, I'm like, whoa, that's fucking wild. But it's this whole like conversation between the two cops to try to double down and then kind of use her as a punchline of.
So that I can put a bow on it for myself. So basically like the audience's reaction to that scene kind of indicates to you that it was done heavy-handedly.
I think the director wanted to somehow, like, you know, make some sort of comment on
I think gender, he did with identity politics.
Yeah, with identity politics.
But you don't think it was done tactfully.
Yeah, but I also appreciate how challenging it is, and it's pretty ballsy. It's like almost like an S. Craig Zoller movie. It's almost like a little taboo, like, whoa.
It is it prompts this good discussion.
But it's interesting. It's just like, and then when I looked online, and like there were like hundreds of people that were also like took up issue with just that one moment in the film that kind of felt like a big misstep. You know,
that's because they're secretly rapists and they're trying to overcompensate. Like, dude, look, man. Like, dude, I don't hit fucking women. It's been a long time. No, I'm just kidding. No. Yeah, look, man. No, I'm just kidding. No, but freaking. Also. Sophia, her perspective, she was very frustrated with the female cop in that scene. Why? Because we know the rest of the story.
Yeah.
And our theater was not full of men, so like I get what you're saying. I do think context matters. Like, but I could see how, of course, could this be not send the wrong message, but could it land wrong with people who are already looking to have their view? Everyone's looking to have their view fucking validated.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So if you're going in there, like. Fuck lying women. Yeah, you're going to love that part.
Yeah.
You're going to love that part. And you're going to think that might be the point of the fucking movie.
Well right. If that's your attitude from the get, the whole movie's going to be like, yeah, fuck this lady.
And also, if you're going into a regular slasher, yeah, fuck lying women, you're also going to like that. Because they get killed and fucking maimed and fucked the whole time.
Yeah, I feel like...
The movie.
It's so, like, punishing of that, you know? It's like, yeah, lying and or dumb, naive women get punished in this movie type of thing, you know?
Yeah. Well, and also, I mean, it's great again. That's where, I mean, I think it's a good segue to the inversion, like naive, dumb, oblivious men, like, because the whole idea, like, you know, like I'm safe. Like when they're leading up to the reveal, they keep intercutting of a scene with him strangling her.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't know the context.
Yeah.
We don't know the context over and over again. You know, and like that whole buildup of her like turning it on, turning it off, turning it on, turning it off. Like, I'm really frustrated watching that. And that's before we know that she's a fucking killer.
Yeah.
And it's just like, you know, it's, so it's just this little like buildup to
it. Yeah. And I like it too because it's, you know, not that this is how we all act, but like that moment of like ebb and flow of a sexual encounter, right? Like where she's really fucking blue balling him at
that chemistry was wild.
It's
incredible.
It was.
That's the sort of thing where like I know in Speak No Evil, I'm like, people don't fucking act like this. This is fucking retarded. This does a really fantastic job of keeping me interested because I'm like, yeah, dude, like if he's trying to fuck, then all of these games that she's playing, he's like, well, okay, well, this is just a means to an end. I'll do the thing.
It's like, what kind of shit are you going to subject yourself? It's a nice, like, condensed version of, like, what a man will subject himself to because he's such a fucking, like, slave to his
cock. We're a slave to our dicks, yeah.
It's like, dude, Jesus Christ. And she knows that. So the control.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, yeah, that's it for the show.
Well, even the sexual encounter itself, it's so, I mean, for a random hookup,
you know, for a random hookup to go to this of this again, this is me being as prudish as I am, but to go to like being so such a violent sexual encounter right off the rip, you want to be like, bro, you know, this may not be
the one for you.
The one for you, man. Yeah. Like, you might want to get out of there.
Well, that's you talking as like a your entire adult life.
Yeah, yeah,
you know.
But of course not, right? Like, yeah. This dude is probably unhappy in his marriage, and yeah. It, you know, this girl is seemingly interested in him, and here we go, choke me. It's like, okay,
yeah,
let's get down.
Let's get it going. Let's get it going. She started sucking my thing. It's not enough. Okay, wait a minute. Freaking, that's unforgivable, all of that. What the fuck were we talking about? I'm sorry about that.
Derailed yourself. Wow. Derailed me. That's crazy.
I just want to watch that video now. there was something in particular I wanted to talk about.
Is the Sasquatch couple?
Oh, well, that's great. Yeah. That was fucking great. The elderly couple, the old hippie couple, but they have guns.
And they're playing like right-wing media.
Doomsday, prepper, hippies, just Sasquatch folk.
Well, and again, it's great. Because it's, thank you for, yes, we got there. Because it's about binary stuff, right? There's this binary idea of male and female and so and gender stereotypes. There's also this like left-wing, right-wing stereotypes. There are a lot of fucking far left-wing doomsday preppers. Mm-hmm. And they are ex-hippies. And they're not anti-gun.
Yeah.
They're not like Jorge's.
That's me, dude.
That's Jorge's a left, pretty left-leaning dude. And he's all about that Second Amendment, brother.
Fucking A right,
you know, like this whole idea that like anyone on the left wing is like fucking a peace love, like a pacifist is like, that's a very useful stereotype for both sides to pit against each other and get people to the election booth. Meanwhile, you got these fucking hippies. You get these hippies out there fucking like, what the fuck are you talking about? Like, I love my guns, you know? So
hell yeah.
Yeah, and it's likewise too, they're probably like Christ freaks. They're probably, it's like, oh, Christians and this, they don't go to, it's like, there's a lot of fucking crazy ass fucking cosmic Christian ex-hippie people gun loving out in rural areas. Like, you don't, yeah. And so I like that it subverts those assumptions, stereotypes, expectations again. Mm-hmm. And the fact that we're all going into this movie, it is like, again, it's critiquing the viewer. It's really done in a very accessible but smart way, though, because you do go in with these fucking expectations. A lot of us have them. We have these assumptions and stereotypes and expectations. The only reason we have the expectations is because we've bought the fucking stereotypes. And it's like, oh, you know, it was surprising they had guns. That's how, because we're so used to that not being the case in a genre film like this.
Yeah.
Which is dope. But also, that was real fucking sad, like, that they both died.
Yeah, they were a cute couple. The breakfast time was fucking weird, but...
Yeah.
Yeah, the food they were making.
That meal was crazy. At first, I was in. Okay, pancakes, eggs, fucking syrup on everything. Or what did they pour? It was just like
syrup and just whipped cream on everything.
Hell yeah.
It was gnarly.
Yeah. Something, too, like, they did a good job of... There's parts where you dislike the guy, and there's parts where you dislike the girl. Mm-hmm. There's things about the guy you dislike.
Even after the reveal.
Like, the parts, too, when she's out in the woods and, like, drinking vodka, like, all of that stuff, I'm like, this is fucking... I mean, that's just... And the colors. And it was like, it's a simple scene. It's a simple setup, dude. But I'm like, dude, I'm, like, so fucking in with this movie right now. Because I don't see this kind of, like, raw fucking shit in movies enough. Like, she's out there, just like, you know.
Well, that part was especially interesting because she stumbles on a homeless guy's little camp out,
which is fucking dope.
And she's just drinking his vodka,
which is fucking dope. And you just see, yeah, how resourceful and her survival instinct and all that.
She even says, like, I am in survival mode at one point when she feels cornered,
right?
And she's got people at gunpoint. She's like, I am in fucking survival mode,
right?
And she's doing everything she can. And it's really cool to see like a film where at least half of it is a serial killer in survival mode, trying to do everything to survive. And they, it's, you know, like usually it would be like the third act when they're caught in the movie, you know. Yeah. And this is essentially, well, because it's told non-linearly.
Right. It's not just the non-linear trick. You're right. Like this stuff happens by the midpoint that would usually happen at the end.
Yeah.
And you're like, what the fuck? Like the stuff with the freezer.
Yeah.
And you're like, and then she gets shot.
Yeah.
You know, and you're like, what, where is this going?
It's like a gut shot too. It's a nasty.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, dude. Absolutely. What else? What else we got here?
I gotta tell you, I think my favorite scene is the last scene with her driving, or actually after she gets plugged by the Native American woman in the truck.
Yeah.
And then that whole sort of like as she's dying, that car ride.
Her physical acting is fucking like awesome, out of this man. World.
Absolutely.
Like, I don't know anything else she's in. I don't know if she's been in much, but like I want to see everything she's been in because
she's in Reacher, that show I fucking.
Oh, really?
Yeah, dude. I was like, where do I know her from? She's in season one of Reacher. Yeah. Anyway, but
she,
yeah.
She, both of them carry that film. I wish Kyle Gallner had more dialogue. I mean, there's not too much dialogue. There's a lot of just physical acting here, but. Yeah. It's so good because I wanted more and more of those two. I think the chemistry and the power dynamic between the two, who's in control, it's fantastic.
It's
like, despite what I was saying and focusing on earlier, like this film is like unlike some shit I've seen all year. You know,
absolutely.
No,
go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, I was gonna say like, and it sounds cheesy, but like I couldn't help but think like. This is very Tarantino-esque, you know. It's up there with those with the quote-unquote Tarantino-esque films, and I love the naturalistic dialogue and the non-linear shit is an obvious, you know, comparison. But it's
throwing out the rule book with the plot structure,
and it's not, and it's never goofy. It's never fucking cheesy.
That's fucking cute.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, if they did it in chronological order, it would have still been incredibly well done. I think the plot twist would have hit effectively at the point it was, whether or not it was done.
It's not a sleight of hand. Like all this stuff is good.
Yeah,
I keep thinking, coming back to the performances too, because even if all that stuff was good, if either him or her were weak in their role, the movie wouldn't work as well. I mean, that's an obvious thing to say, but I mean, imagine this film like without those performances. Like for her, I want to say it's a star-making performance. This movie will find its audience, I believe. It's an indie film. Mm-hmm. It'll take some time to build up some steam because it came out of nowhere and all that. But dude, it is a very like breakout performance for her because she has a lot is asked of her in this movie. A lot is fucking asked of her. And like you said, physical acting and things like that. And when you're talking about that scene at the end, like it's a static shot, and it's at once minimal but very impressionistic because the window's going by outside, and you know what it reminds me of? I'll get there in a second. But it's like
Romulus, huh?
No, it's In a Violent Nature. You remember the truck scene at the end of In a Violent Nature?
Oh my god.
Like, and it's trying to be like, this is like, no, this is how you do it.
Yeah, motherfucker. This is how it's done.
And like, we're even stylistically gonna have fun and like fade to black and white. Like, it's oh, that's pretentious. Like, fuck you. Yeah. Like, no, it's good because she's good and it looks realistic.
Well, and there's a lot of tension there because the entire time I'm like, man, she's gonna kill this lady. Just because.
That's exactly.
It's such a great scene.
It's what that other movie was going. It, not the same situation, but it's a great scene because it's like any moment she could fucking kill her.
Yep. Because she's still got another gun in her jacket. So I'm thinking, she lost the one.
Right.
She still got the other one. Oh fuck, this lady's dead.
What I like too though is the one who really takes her out is a woman.
Yeah,
is another woman, and it's some symmetry there, and it's like okay, cool, and then also she gives just enough of not a backstory, and it's been a minute, right? But I remember her. Here's the thing, like you don't generally people don't show up like this. She's in survival mode, right, and all that. It's not the first time she's been in survival mode. Stuff probably. So I don't want to be like she's a victim, but it points to the fucking, it's again a nice like condensed thing of, it's a woman who's been subjected to some terrible shit, who's weaponized her trauma. Right. And yeah. So there's, I think that's why instinctually too, you don't like, it's not like you hate her as a character. Yeah. You admire her survival. It's like the perfect organism. You know what? No, no, just kidding. No, she's got a strong survival instinct.
Yeah.
And it's like fucking, you know. The other thing too, like about expectations and disliking and liking the characters, you find out he's a cop. Mm-hmm. And it's like, you know, it plays on that thing too of like fucking like, oh, I hate it. It's like you fucked up, number one, because he's a cop. And also like, oh, he's a cop. Like, I like this guy less because he's a cop. Well, absolutely, man. I'm sorry, but I'm like, yeah, I automatically like you less because you're a cop. And I'm not everyone in the theater feels that way, but for the left-leaning people, or especially the like all cops are bastards crowd, it's like it fucks with your, who am I supposed to be rooting for? Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like nobody.
Yeah.
And both. And the old couple. But they're dead too, you know? So I love it. It really fucking took me by. And it's like, it amazes me, man. Men.
Men.
Are we not men? Every year, like, it starts out, man, and it's like, the year gets going. And I know, like, there's a lot of shit that comes out, but every fucking year, I gotta say, dude, like, by the end of the year, there's always great cinema, great albums, like, great stuff. And shit, there's surprises like this. Like, We scour the internet looking for stuff that's coming out. This fucking was not on the radar. Like, it was like a week or two before I saw it where I started hearing about it.
Yeah.
There was no way to fucking anticipate this. And that's just amazing to me that every year you can count on it. There's going to be some surprises. You know, like, no, I'm just kidding. I'm not going to say it again. Like Romulus. But what did this guy do before?
The director? Let's see.
Yeah.
J.T. Molnar.
Yeah, because he's like such a strong stylist, and I think he wrote it also.
So a bunch of shorts up to 2016, and his first... No, he's a writer. Let's see. Hold on.
Well, he went to watch.
Short. Outlaws and Angels was his first
Angels and film. Airwaves.
I'll be here when your heart starts beating.
So no feature film?
There's one. That's Outlaws and Angels, but before that, it's all shorts.
So there's... Oh, I'm just kidding. Outlaws and Angels. And that shit probably sucked from the sound of it. No, but I mean, yeah.
Well, I mean, he took an extended break after it. So either he had to chill out, lick his wounds, and then come back with a pure...
Get it going.
Pure absolute banger.
He's like, I had some practice. Now I want to go like scene for scene, shot for shot, make a fucking certified banger.
Yeah, and what a fucking cast, too. He gets a great cast. He gets great supporting roles. Fucking, it's good, man. It's good.
Yeah, high recommend.
Even the narration stuff doesn't come across as corny.
In the beginning?
Yeah.
It's dope. It's a total obvious homage to fucking Texas Chainsaw Massacre. You know, implying that it's like a true story, but just like Texas Chainsaw, it's not like that's a true story, but you know, it just makes it fun, and that was when I was hooked in immediately.
It's kind of based on the Ed Gein guy, though, right?
Texas Chainsaw, yeah.
Inspired by it, yeah, not based exactly. on
it. Yeah, inspired yeah. it. J.T. Molnar, he hasn't, you know, denied it or anything, but he hasn't said it's whether it's true or not, the whole thing, even though the beginning scroll says it's based off a true story, essentially. But yeah, I think it's just so effective in its storytelling, and I want to see way more from this guy.
Yeah,
I'm very curious. I think he's got a total knack for pacing and storytelling, and whoever his editor is, it's impeccable editing.
Absolutely. I want to see more from him, more from her, and continue to see more from Kyle Gallner.
Yeah.
Like, he's fucking... What a run!
Yeah.
What a run.
And we haven't talked about it, too.
He's like Pete Rose.
Yeah. Fucking... And real quick, too, she's a serial killer because she sees... some men as devils, as demons.
Right.
And
so that's why it's clearly
the beginning, it says credited like Kyle Gallner as the demon and Willa Fitzgerald as
Thank
the
you.
woman.
Yeah, because you just rewatched this perfect.
Yeah, and so you think that, oh, he's a demon, he's the bad guy. But really, like, the twist is, like, she sees certain men as the devil. And there was a point in the film, I think it's like the 40-minute mark around there, and she is having a good time with Kyle Gallner in this little, like, little fling, this one-night stand. And then all of a sudden, she sees him, and it flashes as a devil. And she sees that now he's the devil, and she has to continue her
fight her holy war.
Yeah. So, and I that's great, because that echoes a lot of what a lot of certain serial killers are like, Son of Sam or whatever, you know?
Right.
So I thought it was fantastic. I love the amount that they revealed of the electric lady, but I wouldn't mind seeing more explanation, more backstory on her character, because it was so fascinating and her dynamic, and I'd love to know more about her kind of fucking crazy crusade. Yeah.
Yeah. It's kind of like Ray Nicholson is in Smile 2, Jack Nicholson's son.
Mm-hmm.
And like, because he looks like his dad, we should get a Jack Napier prequel movie.
Ah, yes.
Yeah. That's what everyone's saying.
That's a good idea, right?
Yeah. Let's go put this guy. How much, imagine like he's like in 60 seconds in the movie, and they already have like posters of him and shit.
Jesus Christ, man. Anyway, what's next?
We can definitely have him say the line, right?
Fuck yeah.
He has to say.
Have you ever danced with the devil in the pale moonlight?
You bitch.
You bitch.
It's gotta have that at the end.
Yeah, yeah. Some motherfuckers always try to ice skate uphill.
I mean, well, it's gonna be the Substance if I can catch it before next week.
We got Substance and we got a King Pick. Yeah.
Ooh, yes. Can you catch here? Let's check AMC once we get off this bitch.
All right. Well, that's the Who Goes Your Podcast for episode 424. This is Jorge signing out.
This is Jacob.
This is Red.
Bye, idiots.
Bye, Sophia.
I'm not gonna worry wrinkles in my brow. Nothing's ever gonna be alright, no how. No matter how I struggle and strive, I'll never get out of this world alive.